And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's June 11th. 203 days. Excuse me. Yes, 162nd day of the year. 203 days remain till the year's over with. Get my tongue wrapped around my eye teeth and can't see what I'm saying. In 1184 BC, the Trojan War. Troy sacked and burned, according to calculations by Eratosthenes. 173. Mark Romanic Wars. The Roman army in Moravia is encircled by the Quadi, who have broken the peace treaty that was signed in 171. In a violent thunderstorm, Emperor Marcus Aurelius defeats and subdues him in the so-called Miracle of the Rain. 631, Emperor Taizong of Tang sends envoys to the Wei Antuo bearing gold and silk in order to seek the release of Chinese prisoners captured during the transition from Sui to Tang. 786, a Hassanid Alid uprising in Mecca is crushed by the Abbasids at the Battle of Fakkah. 980, Vladimir the Great consolidates the Kievan realm from Ukraine to the Baltic Sea. He's proclaimed the ruler of all of Kievan Rus. 1011, Lombard Revolt. Greek citizens of Bari rise up against the Lombard rebels, led by Melas, and deliver the city to Basil Esardonides, Byzantine governor of the Cataponate of Italy. 1118, Roger of Salerno, Prince of Antioch, captures Azaz from the Seljuk Turks. 1157, Albert I of Brandenburg, also called the Bear, becomes the founder of the Margraviate of Brandenburg, Germany, and the first Margrave. 1345, the Megas Du, Alexius Epicoccus, chief minister of Byzantine Empire, is lynched by political prisoners. 1429, the Hundred Years' War, started the Battle of Jargu. 1488, Battle of Sauchiebon, fought between rebel lords and James III of Scotland. Results in the death of the king. 1509, Henry VIII of England marries Catherine of Aragon. 1594, Philip II recognizes the rights and privileges of the local nobles and chieftains in the Philippines. This paved the way to the stabilization of the rule of the Principalia. That's an elite ruling class of native nobility in the Spanish Philippines. 1748, Denmark adopts the characteristic Nordic cross flag, later taken up by all other Scandinavian countries. 1770, British explorer Captain James Cook runs aground on the Great Barrier Reef. And everybody wondered how that got there. 1775, American Revolutionary War. The first naval engagement, the Battle of Maceias, results in the capture of a small British naval vessel. 1776, the Continental Congress appoints Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Roger Sherman, and Robert Livingston to the Committee of Five to draft the Declaration of Independence. 1788, Russian explorer Gerasim Ismailov reaches Alaska. Had trouble finding it because of all the snow. 1805, a fire consumes large portions of Detroit in the Michigan Territory. 1825, the first cornerstone is laid for Fort Hamilton in New York City. 1837, the Broad Street Riot occurs in Boston, fueled by ethnic tensions between Yankees and the Irish. 1865, the naval battle of Resuello is fought on the Rivulet Resuello in Argentina. It was fought between the Paraguayan Navy on one side and the Brazilian Navy on the other. The Brazilian victory was crucial for the later success of the Triple Alliance, and that was Brazil, Uruguay, and Argentina in the Paraguayan War. 1892, the Limelight Department, one of the world's first film studios, was officially established in Melbourne, Australia. 1895, Paris-Bordeaux-Paris, sometimes called the first automobile race in history, or the first motor race, takes place on this date. 1898, the 100 Days Reform, that was a planned movement to reform social, political, and educational institutions in China. It started by the Guangzhou Emperor, but suspended by the Empress Dowager Cixi after 104 days. This failed reform led to the abolition of the Imperial Examination in 1905. 1901, the boundaries of the colony of New Zealand are extended by the UK to include the Cook Islands. 1903, a group of Serbian officers storm the royal palace and assassinate King Alexander Obrenović and his wife, Queen Draga. I don't think they were happy with the ruling family. 1917, King Alexander assumes the throne of Greece after his father, Constantine I, abdicates under pressure from Allied armies occupying Athens. 1919, Sir Barton wins the Belmont Stakes, becoming the first tourist to win the U.S. Triple Crown. 1920, during the U.S. Republican National Convention in Chicago, U.S. Republican Party leaders gathered in a room at the Blackstone Hotel to come to a consensus on their candidate for the U.S. presidential election, and led the Associated Press to coin the political phrase, smoke-filled room. 1935, inventor Edwin Armstrong gives the first public demonstration of FM broadcasting in the U.S. He did it at Alpine in New Jersey. 1936, the London International Surrealist Exhibition opens. 1937, the Great Purge. The Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin executes 8 army leaders. 1938, the Second Sino-Japanese War. The Battle of Wuhan starts on this date. 1940, World War II. The Siege of Malta begins with a series of Italian air raids. 1942, World War II. The U.S. agrees to send Lend-Lease aid to the Soviet Union. And they used it against us. 1942, Free French forces retreat from Bir Hakeim after having successfully delayed the Axis advance. 1944. The USS Missouri, the last battleship built by the United States Navy, and the future site of the signing of the Japanese Instrument of Surrender, is commissioned. 1955, 83 spectators are killed, at least 100 are injured after Austin Healey and a Mercedes-Benz collide at the 24 hours of Le Mans, the deadliest ever accident in motorsports. 1956, start of Gal Olaya riots, the first reported ethnic riots that target minority Sri Lankan Tamils in the eastern province. Total number of deaths is reportedly at least 150 and may have been more. 1962, Frank Morris, John Anglin, and Clarence Anglin allegedly become the only prisoners to escape from the prison located on Alcatraz Island. Nobody really knows what happened to them. They just vanished. 1963, American Civil Rights Movement. Governor of Alabama, George C. Wallace, stands in the door of Foster Auditorium at the University of Alabama in an attempt to block 2 black students, Vivian Malone and James Hood, from attending that school. Later on that day, accompanied by federalized National Guard troops, they were able to register. 1963, Buddhist monk Thich Quang Duc burns himself with gasoline in a busy Saigon intersection. He's protesting the lack of religious freedom in South Vietnam. Rather drastic way to do it, don't you think? 1963, on this date, John Kennedy addresses Americans from the Oval Office, proposing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It would revolutionize American society by guaranteeing equal access to public facilities, ending segregation in education, and guaranteeing federal protection for voting rights. 1964, World War II veteran Walter Seifert attacks an elementary school in Cologne, Germany. Kills at least 8 students and children and 2 teachers and seriously injures several more with a homemade flamethrower and a lance. 1968, Lloyd J. Old identified the first cell surface antigens that could differentiate between different cell types. 1970, after being appointed May 15th, Anna Mae Hayes and Elizabeth Hosington officially received their ranks as the U.S. Army generals, becoming the first women to do so. 1971, U.S. government forcibly removes the last holdouts to the Native American occupation of Alcatraz. That ends 19 months of control. 1978, Altaf Hussein founds the student political movement All Pakistan Mohair Students Organization in Karachi University. 1981, there's a magnitude 6.9 earthquake in Golbaf in Iran. At least 2,000 are killed. 1987, Diane Abbott, Paul Boating, and Bernie Grant are elected as the first black MPs in Great Britain. 1998, Compaq Computer pays $9 billion for Digital Equipment Corporation. It's the largest high-tech acquisition up to that point in time. 2001, Timothy McVeigh is executed for his role in the Oklahoma City bombing. 2002, Antonio Meucci is acknowledged as the first inventor of the telephone by the United States Congress, which came as a great shock to Alexander Graham Bell. 2004, Cassini-Huygens makes its closest flyby of the Saturn moon Phoebe. 2007, mudslides in Chittagong, Bangladesh, kill 130. 2008, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper makes a historic office apology to Canada's First Nations in regard to abuses at a Canadian Indian residential school. 2008, the Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope is launched into orbit. 2010, the first African FIFA World Cup kicks off in South Africa. 2012, more than 80 people die in a landslide triggered by 2 earthquakes in Afghanistan. An entire village is buried as a result. 2013, Greece's public broadcaster, ERT, is shut down by then Prime Minister Antonis Samaras, reopened exactly 2 years later by then Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras. 2018, 3 World Trade Center officially opens up. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. American Evacuation Day in Libya. Brazilian Navy Commemorative Day in Brazil. Christian Feast Day. Barnabas the Apostle. Bartholomew the Apostle in the Eastern Christianity. Blessed Ignatius Maloyan in the Armenian Catholic Church. Paula Fresinetti. Ria Gale of Bangor, Davis Day in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, Canada, Kamehameha Day in Hawaii, and in Honduras, it is Student Day. Let's see what else we might have. On this day in 1963, JFK said segregation is morally wrong and it's time to act. 1987, Margaret Thatcher is the first British Prime Minister in 160 years to win a 3rd consecutive term. In 2014, the Islamic State of Iraq forces seize control of government offices and other important buildings in the northern city of Mosul. Let's see what else. 7:58, democratic dispute takes place at the Tang Chinese capital of Chang'an when Abbasid Arabs and Yuriga Turks both arrive to offer tribute. Settlements reached when both enter at the same time through two different gates. 11:44, the Basilica of St. Denis is dedicated near Paris, the first fully Gothic church. 12:31, Harderwijk in the Netherlands becomes a city. 1517, Sir Thomas Pert reaches Hudson Bay. 1578, England grants Sir Humphrey Gilbert a patent to explore and colonize North America. 1644, Florentine scientist Evangelista Torricelli describes his invention of the mercury barometer in 1643. He did it in a letter to Michelangelo Ricci. Of course, he didn't get credit for it. 1676, the Battle of Uhland. The Danish and the Dutch fleet under C.M. Tromp beat Sweden. 1685, James Scott, Duke of Monmouth, rebels against the Catholic King, James II. 1690, English King William III leaves for Ireland. 1699, England, France, and the Netherlands agree on a second extermination treaty of Spain. 1726, Cardinal Fleury succeeds the Duke of Bourbon as French premier. 1742, Benjamin Franklin invents the Franklin stove. 1788, the first British ship built on the Pacific coast is started in Nootka Sound in British Columbia. 1793, the first American stove patent is granted to Robert Hederick. 1816, the Gaslight Company of Baltimore is founded. 1864, the Battle of Trevilian Station, the bloodiest and largest all-cavalry battle of the Civil War, begins in Lee's County in Virginia. 1864, the CSS Alabama, a Confederate sloop of war, and a well-known raider of other ships at sea, arrives in port in Cherbourg, France. 1866, the Agra High Court, now the Allahabad High Court, is established in India. 1870, the first Amstel Brewery opens in Amsterdam. On this day in 1876, Republicans pick Rutherford B. Hayes as presidential candidate. 1878, D.C. was given a new government by Congress. Three commissioners to be picked by suggested by Congress to be appointed by the president. 1891, the Puerto Rican flag is adopted. 1895, Charles Duryea patents a gas-driven automobile. 1896, the U.S. Assay Office in Deadwood, South Dakota is authorized. On this day in 1898, the first U.S. Marines land at Guantanamo, Cuba. It's, there's 600 of them. 1898, Emperor Dezong proclaims reforms in Peking. 1899, 1900, David Beatty, who eventually became Admiral of the Fleet, and 150 men from the HMS Barfleur land as part of a force of 2,400 defending Tientsin from 15,000 Chinese troops who were augmented by the Boxers during the Boxer Rebellion. In 1904, German Lieutenant General Lothar von Trotha lands in Sapokan, Southwest Africa. And finally, in 1911, Universal Negro Improvement Association is founded by Marcus Garvey. Well, that is our history segment for today. And what we'll do now is talk more about some of the conspiracies with which we have been saddled. You know, there have been a lot of discussions about secret projects. And one of the most secret has been called the Montauk Project. And there's quite a number of books on the subject. And what may have been the forerunner is known as the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, related to Montauk is the Brookhaven National Laboratory. And there's a lot of secret projects underway there. And there have been a lot of folks who dedicated their lives to researching all this secrecy. In our democracy, there shouldn't be this type of secrecy. Now, the era we're going to discuss began with the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, the four main witnesses, if you will, are Alfred Bielek, Stuart Swerdlow, Preston Nichols, and Duncan Cameron. And these are real people. I mean, they've been written about in a number of novels, but they are actually real people. And they've told their stories, which may well seem unbelievable, but they appear to believe what they're saying. Now, Bill Cooper, which is a name known to many of you, I was one of the first ones to interview him when he decided to go public. He said, "I know Al Bielek. He's been to my home. I've questioned him from every angle and can't determine whether or not he's telling the truth." He knew about Project Rainbow, which is an experiment in time travel. Now, Cooper said he didn't know the results of Rainbow, and he talked to me about it at the time we did the interview. But he knew it existed. Now, Bielek was a retired electrical engineer, and he said he was part of the mysterious Philadelphia experiment that took place in 1943. Now, the concept originally came from none other than Albert Einstein. And as I understand the simplistic idea upon which all this was based, our molecules move at a certain speed because of the energy in our bodies. In theory, if you increase the energy, the molecules move faster, and we can no longer see the individual whose molecules have been sped up. Conversely, if you slow them down, we can't see that either, because the human eye can only see in a certain range of speed. Now, as a result of Einstein's work, which had something to do with his theory of relativity, U.S. Navy undertook an experiment that became known as the Philadelphia Experiment. They wanted to make a destroyer undetectable to radar. This took place in 1943. Now, the test ended with disastrous results, which included the ship disappearing from the Philadelphia Navy Yards and, according to the story, traveling through time. Al Bielek claims to have been one of the seamen who was below decks in the control room operating the generators that powered the Philadelphia Experiment. The ship was USS Eldridge. Took place in 1943. According to Bielek, he was transported ahead in time from Philadelphia, and he said extraterrestrials were responsible for technology used in the Philadelphia Experiment. And we got the initial concept from a crashed UFO. He also said he was recruited in 1970 to work on mind control and time travel projects at Montauk. Well, in spite of the best efforts of the government to erase his memories, he says, his memories began to return. And it happened in January of 1988. 1989, he decided to go public with the information about his involvement at Montauk and the Philadelphia Experiment. I would have him on the show, and I tried once before, and when it was not able to make it happen. Al Bielek died in Mexico, October 10, 2011. He was 84 years old, and he stuck to his story until the day he died. Now, Stuart Swerdlow is another interesting personality. His story began when he was kidnapped as a teenager from his Long Island, New York home, taken to Montauk, subjected to a variety of experiments. According to his story, while in high school, he was picked up at night by what he initially thought were extraterrestrials and brought to Montauk base. Later on, he learned that his kidnappers were actually military officials working under the guise of ETs. And because of what was said to be his special characteristics, he became part of the Montauk Genetic Experiment Program. Later learned that only 1% of the people involved in that program ever survived. And he became sort of an abnormality with special skills. And those skills were used extensively as a programmer of the Montauk Boys. And while at Montauk, he said he knew of Al Bielek. And he said that Al was the psychic program manager while he was there. 1983, the Montauk station was destroyed, though it was later rebuilt. He went into what he called a tailspin. He said he believed the station had a lock on him and in some sense controlled him. And when the lock was released, he lost his identity. He claimed to have been working hard to successfully regain his identity. He claimed he was put in federal prison to persuade him not to talk about his past. Now, what's unique to Stuart is he never lost the memories of his experience at Montauk Base. And he began to teach others how to use the techniques he had been taught at Montauk for positive purposes. He began teaching seminars on how to align and enhance the mental capabilities of his students. He said beatings, a lot of torture, electrical shock, burials, no drownings. They'd bring you to the point of death, and then they'd save you, and the person doing this would be your rescuer or God, and would say, I'm the one that saved you, and remember that. That person became your handler, your programmer, if you will. Swerdlow recalls being part of some horrific experiments while at the Montauk facility. He said the walls were damp. They oozed water that appeared to be deep underground or even underwater. He said, I was always on this cold, hard table. Sometimes there'd be other people around, my age or older, and electrodes were put into me and there were injections. Now, he claims to be a gifted mentalist who was born clairvoyant but haunted by strange time-space scenarios. After suffering alien abduction and government manipulation, Stewart said he met Nichols and discovered his own role in time travel experiments at the Montauk Project. After refusing to break his association with Nichols, Stewart was incarcerated by the authorities, but slowly the truth came out. He said he's used his mental abilities to overcome the negative influences surrounding him and claims to have discovered the highest common denominator in the alien equation, an interdimensional language that communicates to all conscious beings. Now, you have to wonder about people who come up with these things, and if it was just made up to make a buck, they wouldn't stick with it for so many years. But if you talk to these people, as I've talked to quite a number over the years, they honestly believe what they're saying. Preston Nichols is another. He was an electrical engineer, says he worked with Bielik in the mind control and psychic aspects of the Montauk Project. Now, he was a Long Island-based microwave engineer who supposedly lost his job with an electronics firm called AIL. And about that time, he began to remember glimpses of an alter ego existence. And this existence he believed he was living in, he was being used for his technical expertise to revamp and maintain the radar at Montauk Air Base. Involved with a series of unofficial secret underground experiments performed by a renegade group of scientists and military men who had originally operated out of the Brookhaven National Laboratory on Upton, Long Island. Nichols claims that through hypnosis and brainwashing, he was made to forget that he was living a double life. By day, he was an engineer. By night, he was whisked out to the supposedly derelict Montauk radar base, where he took place in some of the strangest experiments you could imagine. And at the control group ousted him from the program, and snatches of these memories began to creep back into him, his normal life. As chief technician running the Montauk radar, he would have been the resident expert on what they were doing and how they were doing it, technologically speaking, of course. The bottom line is, Nichols claims to have used a modified version of the old Montauk radar under duress to generate an updating Philadelphia experiment with accomplishments far exceeding those claimed by Carl Allen in the original story. Then he got pulled into the mind sciences project at Montauk. They were working hard to interface a person's mind with a computer. Then you have Duncan Cameron. And he's one of the central figures in the Philadelphia experiment, the Montauk Project story. According to Al Bielik, Duncan was his brother when Al was actually known as Ed Cameron. And he jumped off the USS Eldridge in 1943 and landed into the future. When they wound up in 1983 at Montauk, both were sent back to the USS Eldridge to destroy the equipment that was keeping the ship in hyperspace. Now, I've heard this story from quite a number of people when I was doing my show out of California. And when you hear somebody tell a story, you look for internal coherence. And I found it with everybody I was dealing with. He was used extensively as a psychic, the Montauk Project. And he became one of the principal psychics that manned what was called the Montauk Chair. The chain was used to create and hold the frequency required to perform the time travel and mind control activities. Now, Duncan Cameron, also from the South Shore of Long Island, was a younger man, younger than Bielik, born in June of 1951. He's rather zen-like and esoteric when he says something, such as everything and nothing is possible. Dunk is believed to have gone through grueling psychological and psychic training in secret military programs, fitting him as a subject for experimentation and mind control in the Montauk Project. Now, I talked to a number of folks who had been in, little-known segments of the military and I got surprising confirmation of a lot of projects you would never think anybody in their right mind would fund. Duncan claimed he's one of a group of people trained for clarity of deep thought, and these thoughts were supposedly amplified, projected into hyperspace. Via the Montauk radar, Duncan was trained to project his thoughts in an effort to create time tunnels, which may have been the basis for the time tunnel television show. Now, the Philadelphia experiment, which is what I got started talking about, was carried out by the U.S. Navy at the Philadelphia Navy Shipyard sometime around October 28, 1943. A U.S. Navy destroyer escort, USS Eldridge, DE-173, was rendered invisible, or the term that they used was cloaked, from enemy observation. Now, the Eldridge, the log, doesn't show what was involved in experiments, but this was done after it was launched, but before it went into active service. The whole thing first came to light in the mid-1950s when somebody identifying himself as Carlos Allende, also known as Carl Allen, wrote several strange letters to UFO writer and astronomer Morris K. Jessup. Allen said he had witnessed a secret World War II experiment at the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And he wrote about a U.S. Navy destroyer that in October of 43 had been subjected to a force field in an effort to make it invisible. Well, instead of making it just invisible, it was teleported from the Navy Yard to Norfolk, Virginia, and back all within a matter of minutes. Other versions of the story claim that the ship was teleported to Montauk. Unfortunately, the experiment supposedly also had the side effect of rendering half the officers and crew insane, with some of the crewmen unpredictably becoming invisible or bursting into flame as long as years later. Now, the U.S. Navy, when questioned, swore no such experiment was ever conducted, that the alleged details of the story contradict well-established facts about the Eldridge, and the claims don't conform to known physical laws. However, in 1957, Jessup was contacted by the Office of Naval Research. They had gotten a parcel containing a paperback copy of his book, The Case for the UFO. And the book had been extensively annotated in the margins. And in the margins, they discussed two different types of people living in outer space. And there were references to what became known as the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, George Simpson and Neil Berger published a 1978 novel titled Thin Air. And in that book, set in the present day, a Naval Investigative Service officer investigates several threads linking wartime invisibility experiments to a conspiracy involving matter transmission technology. And, of course, Charles Berlitz also wrote a book called The Philadelphia Experiment, Project Invisibility, which he claimed was a factual account of what took place. Now, the book expanded on stories of bizarre happenings, lost unified field theories of Albert Einstein, and government cover-ups, all based on the Allende Allen letters to Jessup. Now, Charles Berlitz, who had a co-writer by the name of Moore, devoted one of the last chapters of the Philadelphia Experiment to the force fields of Townsend Brown, referring to the experimenter and innate U.S. Navy technician Thomas Townsend Brown. Paul Violetti's book, Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, also recounts some mysterious involvement of Townsend Brown. You have to wonder, anytime we see technology in operation with the military, it is two generations away from being state-of-the-art. So if we've got stealth aircraft today, what do we have that is not revealed? There are several different, sometimes contradictory versions of the alleged experiments that have made the rounds. Now, the experiment was allegedly based on an aspect of the unified field theory, which is a term coined by Einstein to describe the class of potential theories. These theories were aimed to describe, mathematically and physically, the interrelated nature of the forces that comprise electromagnetic radiation and gravity. In other words, uniting the fields of electromagnetism and gravity into one single field. According to some accounts, unspecified researchers thought that some version of this field would enable using large electrical generators to bend light around an object through refraction, so the object became completely invisible. And of course, to the Navy, in 1943, this would have been of tremendous military value. And that's why they sponsored the experiment. Now, another unattributed version of the story proposes researchers were preparing magnetic and gravitational measurements of the seafloor to detect anomalies, supposedly based on Einstein's attempt to understand gravity. In this version, there's also related secret experiments in Nazi Germany to find anti-gravity, supposedly carried out by SS Obergruppe and Führer Hans Kammler, who's said to have been the man behind the Nazi bell. That was supposed to be such a super weapon. Now, in most accounts of the supposed experiment, the Eldridge was fitted with the required equipment at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. Testing began in the summer of 43, and it was supposedly successful to a limited extent. One test resulted in the Eldridge becoming nearly invisible, with some witnesses reporting a greenish fog appearing in its place. Crew members reported suffering severe nausea after the experiment. Also, reportedly, when the ship reappeared, some sailors were actually embedded in the metal structures of the ship, including one sailor who ended up on a deck level below where he'd begun and had his hand embedded in the steel hull of the ship. And some sailors are said to have gone completely bananas. At that point, the experiment was altered at the request of the Navy, with the new objective being solely to render the Eldridge invisible to radar. Of course, none of these allegations have been independently substantiated. Then there are claims that the equipment wasn't promptly recalibrated, but in spite of this, the experiment was repeated October 28, 1943. This time the Eldridge not only became invisible, but disappeared from the area in a flash of blue light and teleported to Norfolk, Virginia, over 200 miles away. And it was claimed the Eldridge sat for some time in view of men on board the ship SS Andrew Farus. And in shortly after they saw it, the Eldridge vanished again and reappeared in Philadelphia at the site it originally started. It was reported that the warship also went approximately 10 minutes back in time. Now, many versions of the story include descriptions of serious side effects for the crew. Some crew members are said to have been physically fused to bulkheads, and others suffered mental disorders. Some rematerialized inside out, and others just vanished completely. It's also said the ship's crew may have been subjected to brainwashing to keep the experiment secret. Now, according to Bielik, research into invisibility actually began in 1931 in Chicago. At that time, there had been a lot of speculation in the 1930 editions of Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, Science Illustrated on the subject of invisibility, trying to make objects disappear or a person disappear, even teleport. According to what was published at the time, researchers thought they were close to success, but it was mostly speculation. And then in 1931, positive steps were taken to do something about it. Getting together at the University of Chicago were Nikola Tesla, Dr. John Hutchinson, Dean of the University of Chicago, and a Dr. Kurtenauer, who was an Austrian physicist and was on the staff at the University of Chicago. After some research and a feasibility study was completed, the entire project was moved to the Institute of Advanced Studies at Princeton. Now, the Institute of Advanced Studies was in and of itself an interesting organization. It's not part of the university system. It's not even part of Princeton. It simply exists on Princeton property, but it's an independent entity. Now, among the first people to join was Albert Einstein. He joined the staff in 1933. Now, his principal function was a theoretical physicist, well known, for his special theory of relativity and his general theory of relativity and the unified field theory. It was thought that he had a lot to add to the project. Other people joined shortly after that. One of the most important individuals, of course, was Dr. John von Neumann and Dr. Robert Oppenheimer of the atomic bomb fame. And the influence of Dr. David Hilbert, who was the first to define mathematically multiple realities and multiple space, was certainly an element. He laid the groundwork to what later became known as the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, most are not aware of the beginning of the Philadelphia Experiment. September 1940, the first test of invisibility was performed on a small Navy tender in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and it was a success. Now, nobody was on board the ship, and power was externally supplied, but the ship faded from view. At that point, the Navy got involved and classified the project as Project Rainbow. Roosevelt was excited about the success of the project and asked to perform invisibility on a battleship. Now, this was an important discovery. At that time, the U.S. was losing a half our merchant ships going to the U.K. to the German U-boats. If we could make them invisible, what a success that would be. Now, according to Al Bielek, it was a bizarre story. It begins with Tesla being assigned a battleship by Franklin Roosevelt, and he said, "You can have this ship, go ahead, make it invisible." And everybody believed that he could do it. And so Tesla proceeded with the building of the hardware. There were three RF transmitters and generators. The general plan was to use a series of magnetic coils driven by these generators that would produce a very intense magnetic field. Now, initially, they were wrapped around the hull of the ship. Later, it was changed to coils mounted on the deck. There were four of them. The RF fields all synchronized with special frequencies and special modulation waveforms developed by Tesla that it was believed would produce the field of invisibility. Now, in case nobody's heard, Tesla actually claimed that he had help from the aliens. He made a press announcement in 1923 about talking with ETs off-planet, and he maintained a stance that he was in communication with ETs much of the time. Now, two people who worked with Tesla in his lab said he was using his equipment to talk with somebody virtually every day. And one of them was very emphatic. One of those people was off the planet, physically. Now, during that period, he got some additional information and suddenly went to the Navy and said, "We're going to have a personnel problem. Then have a very serious personnel problem. You can't develop the amount of power necessary to make a large ship invisible without having a number of effects on the personnel. I need some more time. I need to develop countermeasures for this so that the personnel are not harmed." The Navy's response: "You got a deadline. There's a war on. Make it happen. You can fix it, but don't change it." Well, the deadline was March of 1942. The specific test approach, and Tesla was not a happy camper. And finally decided with no extension in time and no way he could modify the hardware to collect the problem, there's only one way out. That was by sabotaging the equipment, making sure it would never work when it was turned on, which is in essence what he proceeded to do for the test of March of 42. Battleship didn't have a special crew on board, had the regular crew, although it did have the specialized equipment. Well, the equipment was turned on and nothing happened. Using that as his excuse, Tesla bowed out of the project and said, "Gentlemen, the experiment's a failure. It's time for me to leave. There's a good man to come and take over and make things work, and that's Dr. John von Neumann. I'm out of here." Now some of the other people in the background have become part of the project are well-known. One of them was T. Townsend Brown. He had a long history. Many people know him for the fact that he worked in the UFO field with electrostatics, attempting to prove you can make an object move by means of high voltage or electrostatic fields. Did a lot of work and is well-documented and well-researched. Townsend Brown worked on the Philadelphia experiment designing a special radio transmitter and a tower to support the antennas, which was the high tower on the Eldridge that became important later on and shown in the movie, and that was accurate. Before Dr. von Neumann could complete his work, he told the Navy, "I got to restudy this thing. Obviously, it didn't work. I got to go back and find out why." In May of 42, they decided they're going to send a special ship for von Neumann to work with. The battleship was no longer available, went back into service. They decided they wanted to build a test vehicle from the ground up, searching out what ships might be suitable that were going to be built. So they picked on DE-173, which was later christened the Eldridge. Now, it wasn't known at that time by that name. It was just known as the 173. In July of 42, they modified the drawings, decided where they wanted the two generators. Now, the reason they had to do this redesign was the destroyer, the DE, was a rather small ship. Had a normal displacement of about 1,500 tons, not 30,000. Consequently, they had to fit the equipment, which was quite heavy, very carefully on board the ship. What they decided to do was leave the forward gun turret off and leave a hole there. That's where the generators would go. The motor drive for the generators, the diesel electric system to drive the entire system, and four transmitters are eventually mounted on the deck. But the ship actually had to be built first. It arrived at the Navy Yard in October 42 and went to the dry dock, where they started to fit it out with various pieces of equipment. So in January 43, it was basically ready. Now, insofar as the human equation was concerned, what they're going to do for the crew, about June or so of 42, they decided they're going to have a special crew, all volunteers, handpicked, who would probably, and as they did, essentially sign their lives away. This crew of 33 went through a special training school at Groton, Connecticut, at the Coast Guard Academy. And now it was time to test the various subsystems, the generators, the RF transmitters. Tesla used three. Von Neumann went to four, and he finally decided to go with the power of the transmitter selected by Tesla, which were made by General Electric. The 500 kilowatt CW wasn't sufficient, but boosters on them to raise each one to 2 megawatt CW. And the two generators remained essentially the same, 75 kVA each. Now that's fairly low frequency, motor-driven, special synchronizing circuits to make sure the two generators were in absolute sync. They had to be, or it wouldn't have worked. Special generator system was built with another very exotic device. It came directly from Tesla. And that was the zero time reference generator. Now that's not a term that's used often. It's a system that's quite simply locks to the Earth's field. The Earth's magnetic structure and has a mass resonance through a very ingenious system designed by Tesla. Now, all the planets in our system and even all the planets throughout this galaxy are basically locked into the cosmology having a zero time reference, which is the geocentric center of our galaxy. Everything has to be referenced to the zero time point. It's a reference point, actually. Regardless of the local time, you must refer to this thing to make everything work, and Tesla found the means to do it rather simply. These reference generators exist in every FAA system ever built for the glide slope, our landing systems, and was part of the system. In the final version, some 3,000 6L6 tubes were used to drive the fuel cores of the two generators. Along about March of 43, von Neumann started to get the shakes. He wouldn't believe Tesla at first, and Tesla kept saying it's going to be a personnel problem, and von Neumann wouldn't believe it. Finally, he decided something had to be done. He added a third generator. They designed and built one and added it about late April or early May. Now, they had problems. Serious problems, and they could never synchronize it to the other two. But they were going to do the experiment anyway. Along about June, in one of the tests, the third generator went slightly berserk. Started generating enormous arcs. So von Neumann looked at this and said, that generator's no good, remove it. So they eventually went back to just two generators. Eventually, in late June, they decided that the ship, which had long since out of dry dock and sitting at dockside in the Philadelphia Navy Yard, was to go to sea for sea trials. Came back, everything was just fine. They then went to dockside for the final testing. July 20th, they decided the ship was ready, so that special test crew was assembled, including a captain who was to handle the ship, Captain Hangle. Now, he wasn't a permanent captain, but he was the captain for this experiment. So on the 22nd, everybody was on board. Well, the ship went out to its position, its station in the harbor. At 0900 hours, they were told to throw the switch, and a whole series of them, really. There were, at that point, only two generators left, so they turned it on, the ship became invisible. They left it that way for about 15, 20 minutes. Then the order was given to cut off the equipment, and the ship went back to port. When they got back, that's when they realized there were issues. The personnel, those who were above deck, were totally disoriented, nauseous, throwing up, almost to the point of delirious, and obviously not with it. So the Navy saw the state of affairs, and they said, get the crew off, and we'll get you a new crew. Right, there was a personnel problem. He went to the Navy, and he said, I need more time to study this problem. We have to find out what to do to correct it. And the Navy said, you got a drop-dead date of the 12th of August, 1943. You'll do the testing by that point in time, or forget the whole thing. Well, then the Navy decided in the meantime, they didn't really need full invisibility. They just wanted radar invisibility. Now, the reasoning behind that was at that point in time, we didn't have such things as inertial guidance systems. We didn't have worldwide LORAN and SHORAN navigational systems. All you had to navigate with was line of sight, the eye and radar. If you make the ship radar invisible at night, you can't tell where the ship is unless it's optically visible. If it's optically visible, invisible, you may ram an adjacent ship. That was the thinking, and they said no more optical invisibility. So von Neumann said, yeah, we can accommodate that. So they did. Then came the final day, August 12th, 1943. Went out into the harbor again. Everybody was a little shaky. Orders came to throw the switches, turn on the equipment. For 60 or 70 seconds, everything looked just fine. They had radar invisibility. You could still see the ship. Then there was a blue flash and the ship vanished. And on that note, we run out of time for today's show. We'll talk about what happened after that in tomorrow's show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.